dinner session with Mr. Joshi will be held in the library after school. See you there.
Great to be here for the closing night show here at what is this? Is this San Francisco? Okay, been here for 2 weeks, and this is the closing night with two shows, right? And I'm really looking forward to it, so let's get going, huh?
Yo, what the fuck's up? It's your boy Josh Yost, aka Mr. Joshi, here with Intercession Episode 2. I just finished like this crazy ass week of homework. I did 3 discussion posts, and then after I was done typing all that shit down and pressing send and replying to at least one classmate, I read an email from like last week that was like, hey, if we have 3 discussion posts, you don't have to do one. I did all 3. And I replied. I'm looking at it as practice. So, getting my reps up. I just got home from a little concert that our students had. And they did a good-ass job. When they were warming up, the guitarist played Head in the Ceiling Fan, and I was like, damn, I love that. Title Fight is still alive. I didn't know how to react. I like heard it and I was like, what the fuck did I just hear? And then I just like, I don't know, I had to hold it in. I held it in, rather. And then I went to go congratulate the students, and he was like, what, I love Title Fight. It's a great moment. Which all kind of ties into today's episode. Last episode, we talked about time. And I kind of want to keep that theme of time going. You know, last week, we talked about letting time happen and just allowing yourself to exist and, you know, let it do its thing. And today, I kind of want to talk about nostalgia. It's been something I've been thinking about a lot. A lot of it comes from like the halftime show, the Usher halftime show, which a lot of my friends were excited about. Pretty much everyone I knew was excited about it, and I was excited about it too. 8701 is the second album I've bought with my money. The first one being the party one with Aaron Carter, his first album, and then the third one being Country Grammar by Nelly. But 8701 has a special place in my heart, and so does Confessions. So I love Usher, but I feel like my generation especially, or is it a Bay Area thing? I'm sure it's universal. It's like liking 90s R&B is like, can be someone's entire personality. And like, it's good. I get it. I grew up around that stuff, you know, like it's amazing stuff, but it's, to me, I'm like, there's just so much else, dude. But I think that's just me being a brat because somebody else is experiencing their nostalgia. And I guess it's because, like, during that time, like, middle school, I feel like is a huge time for R&B. No matter how old you are, I feel like. And during that time, I moved a lot, so I saw a lot of my friends, like, make memories. Like, their MySpace songs was, like, Neo and shit. And they're making memories without me, and I'm seeing it all on MySpace, and I'm going insane. Soon to find out, like, that's just a symptom of social media, dude. You're just, like, watching somebody's life, and you're just comparing it against yours, and you're just like, fuck, this sucks. There's so much shit I'm missing out on, and I'm freaking out. Yeah, I mean, that's still happening to me today, so. It's weird how that works. But yeah, everyone was making, I feel like, good memories with those songs, and I was just making different memories. I think that was a little sad for me. I mean, those songs are great, right? But it's funny that, like, the songs that I really attach myself to are kind of, like, sad songs. Because, like, I felt that connection to it. You know, saying it out loud, I'm just like, duh, right? But then, like, this is just me fumbling over my words. Yeah, I think the songs that really stuck out for me were, like, songs I was discovering in my own time by myself, which happened to be, like, a lot of Fall Out Boy and, like, emo shit like that. But yeah, I think I was just being a brat. But I don't know. I think it's because I have a pessimistic view on nostalgia. I kind of noticed this when, like, the third or fourth Transformer came out, and I'm just like, I'm so tired of this. Like, when the first Transformers came out, I was like, this is fucking tight. Shia LaBeouf in a alien transforming movie, like, I don't know. It was just, like, the peak of, like, excitement when I was in high school. And I loved Transformers as a kid. And I had the toys, and I watched the things with my uncles. And it was a great time. And then it just kept on happening. I'm just like, dude, I'm over this shit. And it feels like a lot of nostalgic things are like that. Like, the concerts, the nostalgia fests that are happening. And there's, like, 40, 50 people on the bill. And if you do the math in your head, it's like every band gets like 15 minutes. And it's just like, I saw, like, Chingy on one of these things. And, shoot, who else? Why am I blanking right now? This is a little embarrassing. But it was just like, everyone that we listened to or saw on, like, 106 and Park, like, they're on this concert list, this festival list. And it's, like, 50 names deep. And I'm like, how the fuck does this even happen? Or those nostalgia fests that are, like, super curated to just represent, like, the mid-2000s. And it's, like, why am I blanking again? This is embarrassing. But it feels so over-manufactured, hyper-manufactured, that it loses what makes it special. And I know that those shows aren't going to be as good because they're just going to be so like disorganized. And I think that's when nostalgia becomes dangerous, as if you're forcing it and you're stuck there and you don't want to leave. Sometimes I mean, I could get nostalgic too, but I also like force myself to avoid it sometimes. I decided to like read about nostalgia and learn about nostalgia, and most of what I'm reading, most philosophers who like mention nostalgia or whatever talk about going back and determining or figuring out your authentic self, like shaping yourself with the past, you know. I think I jumped a little too far there. Let me I'll get to that later in the show. But today I'm gonna play songs that sound like vaguely nostalgic. A lot of these songs are new, or a lot of these songs might not be that popular, but they just sound like you might know them. So I got some songs like that, and then the McGee album came out and I really enjoyed it, so I'm gonna be playing a block of McGee and talking about that a little bit. One of the teacher librarians shared a poem with me, or a short story rather, and it was a moment of taking your mask off to let some tears fall down your cheek type moment for us in the library. Yeah, it was beautiful, and it just so happens to remind me about nostalgia, so I'll be sharing a reading of that. And we got a segment from Claude from Run It Back. I asked him about nostalgia. We'll be hearing from him later on. We got a voice note that I got that I really liked, so I'm gonna share that with you. And yeah, I'm gonna play some songs, and then I'll play a video essay. Well, it's not gonna be video, right? But I'll play this essay about nostalgia, and it'll help me kind of get those feelings explained to you. Up next, we got Fortune Teller by Say She She. This song came out like last year. It sounds like it came out a long time ago. More previous time ago. Here we go.
can't stop you from going blind.
Presented by Orange Radio.
That was Dominoes by Jungle. If you want the playlist, it'll be on Spotify. Just give me a DM. Next up, we have a video essay. That's the essay I was talking about that talks about why we need nostalgia. And it was something that I needed to hear. So I thought I should share it with you.
Smelling the potent mixture of coffee, pine needle, and morning freshness that would jolt you awake on family camping trips. Feeling, once again, the serene humidity of a tropical night so many years ago. Hearing, like the first time, the melody that accompanied so many of your ups and downs throughout high school. When you had that crush. When you lost a friend. Rediscovering the trinket that links us to those who were once loved and never forgotten. These vessels into the past carry us away to simpler times, where events held purpose and consequences were foreseeable, unlike the present, where every second is a turbulent, meaningless spiral into the next, and the directions you take rarely turn out right. Except that isn't quite correct either. Upon deeper reflection, we understand that every honey-glazed reunion with our past selves should also require a responsible chaperone, reality. With every teenage crush, we recall the pimples. With every childhood birthday, we acknowledge the absence of friends. We come to realize that the past was just as easily succumbent to the chaotic dizziness of the present, and that, even more so, It was merely time that gave it sense and meaning. Remembrance of things past is not necessarily the remembrance of things as they were, warns Marcel Proust. This is a sad but worthy concession. Memories are only as valuable as they are loyal to the truth, and so we return to our nostalgic indulgence with a deeper pledge to honesty. Nonetheless, and despite our allegiance to the truth, the return is always as painful as it is pleasant. Is it due to the previous insight? The fact that happiness is a rarity that we trick ourselves into treating as a constant? Happiness is the moment before you need more happiness, says fictional ad executive and nostalgia manipulator Don Draper. Is that all there is? Momentary joys interrupted by long stretches of struggle? Or is nostalgia meant to be painful? Take the word itself, from the Greek word nostos algos, usually translated as the pain of returning home. This etymological lesson rips out the flowery idealism of nostalgia in its modern form. Certainly one could still argue for the intact common definition, a homesickness or yearning to return that is literally painful. Equally, however, nostalgia is a painful process in itself. Why? As Mark Kingwell writes, we can chalk it up to the jarring dislocations and inarticulate grievings of coming back to something that is no longer as you imagined it during the homeward journey. We return to a place of comfort, a link to better times, and find it twisted and distorted. Note that this is not just about favorite films from childhood, pieces that fail to hold up to the scrutiny of our now refined adult taste. No, one can experience this pain with long-lost friends, family members, and even one's lost possible self. Hence the cliche retelling of someone looking in the mirror and wondering what happened to oneself, meaning the self of that long-ago utopia, where one felt, by default, much happier, where the world was much larger, and the possibilities were still just that. As Sylvia Plath writes, I saw my life branching out before me like the green fig tree in the story. From the tip of every branch, like a fat purple fig, a wonderful future beckoned and winked. I saw myself sitting in the crotch of this fig tree, starving to death, just because I couldn't make up my mind which of the figs I would choose. I wanted each and every one of them, but choosing one meant losing all the rest. And, as I sat there, unable to decide, the figs began to wrinkle and go black, and, one by one, they plopped to the ground at my feet. Certainly life is filled with endless possibilities, but just as equally, the certainty that our time to explore them will soon run out, necessity, greatly diminishes our chances of experiencing them all. And so we live various moments of possibility that must, for a good reason, die out and be found. While washing the dishes, or in bed on a Sunday morning, forever buried in the past. Nostalgia in this sense provides a space to mourn a past we can never revisit, whether it is a place, a self, or a moment. An interesting study by the psychologist Laura King captures this. King asked divorced women to write descriptions of their best possible future selves that are now lost due to the divorce, and the best possible self after the divorce, defined as the found possible self. She found that the level of detail given in the lost pre-divorce possible self was associated with lowered happiness but greater maturity. She also found elaboration of the found possible self was positively related to happiness and maturity. She concludes that while happiness may require us to avoid thinking about what might have been, maturity might require an awareness of the losses and sacrifices of adulthood. King shows us that a meaningful sort of happiness, what we may call personal growth, is not built on ignorance, but instead a healthy recognition of what is forever lost, and the gentle belief that something good is yet to come. Ignorance may be bliss, but not all forms of bliss require ignorance. Sometimes we need to be truthful and revisit past potentials. Nostalgia, then, is a necessary farewell, a pleasant and painful acceptance that what was comfortable, warm, lovely, and perfect was also impermanent. It is up to us to carry out this heartfelt act of acceptance, to mourn the loss of what once was, what could have been, and to, equally, celebrate that such mourning orients us towards that which we had once found meaningful, and that this orientation is still within us, that what we find meaningful still persists in future potentialities, awaiting us to experience them. At the end of our mourning, we find that not all is lost. Revisit the past, but accept that it is gone, that you can never truly return home. If you're lucky, if time holds its magical effect, you may even find that home is closer than you thought. But this will take time to know, of course. In the words of Kierkegaard, life can only be understood backwards, but it must be lived forwards.
This fool said, ignorance is bliss, but not all forms of bliss require ignorance. Here's Haters Anthem by Infinity Song. Doesn't this kind of remind you of that one, like, Chef Boyardee commercial? Is that the one where, like, the can rolls home?
I love the way it feels to be a hater. Something so sweet about thinking that I'm better. Just to wake up every morning, lay in bed, and somehow never ever rise to the occasion, or even hold up under pressure. But we all know that it doesn't even matter. If I waste away and no one thinks I'm clever, just as long as I've got my ego and it tells me I'm superior,
I still Outside, and we were talking, and guess who the fuck came around the corner? It was this guy, and his passenger person was my ex. So I saw him first before he saw me, so I looked away, and I was like, I better look good as fuck, because I just want him. I just hope, like, him seeing me ruined my day. Not ruined my day, like, ruined his day, sorry. But anyway, I just went out with my uni friends, and I don't know why I'm somehow in like a beer garden, beer place right now, and I literally had a pint of like some vodka cocktail thing called Sex on the Beach. I've never had a Sex on the Beach before, so that was Sex on the Beach for me. So yeah, I feel like my voice is croaky and I don't sound like this, but anyway, I just wanted to tell you that I saw my ex and I didn't have a panic attack, because I've been, you know, like building it up in my head for like 7 months, and I finally saw him after 7 months, and I just thought, fuck off, you know what I mean, because it's a fucking twat, and I just hope his knob falls off. That's all I have to say. Goodbye, love you very much, bye bye.
This is for anybody that's coming, no, what, this is for anybody who's going through a comeback season. Love you, Ostley.
Made it out the shell. If I did want to see the day, it's a setback. Every time I see the cage, you got warfare. If you do, then we can play. It got real dark. All right, bro, I see the way. It could be nacho cheese, mine shorty Frito-Lay. I look both ways across the streets, and then she still wasn't safe. I don't go to church. Man, damn, I need to pray. S-O-S-A-B-A-B-Y, gang. How that pound smell? We don't know your boy, get your ass around here. For the round table, I went and bought some round chairs. 50 little wobbing goo out my lounge gear. At the gun range, bang, sound check, it sound clear. She want the goo wop, the loo wop, I don't wear. Tell your man, don't go there. I'm in a church and I'm tryna get my soul clear. Wrote my name on the wall, hope it don't smear. Said I love you 40 times, I was sincere. He popping out with same clothes that my bitch wear. Dirty hoe said I was broken, I said bitch wear. All my exes missing out, they need to get here. All these bitches up in my head like some L'Oreal. Bro got booked in 2011, it feel like 40 years.
This Chicago, nigga.
Hi, Lil' Keith Granny, so proud of you. After you went on with your life, moved out of my house and kept on. Granny just love it. Keep going, baby, keep going. Granny just love how you move and doing yourself well. Thank God. Thank God.
She can't love you like I do.
No, no,
she
Up next, we got Claude from Run It Back sharing a story about nostalgia. And he included a song, too. If you need another newsletter to add to your email list, if you need some, like, poop material. I mean, no, like when you go poo and then you need something to read, you know. Runitback.co. I have a couple segments on there. I'm going to mention one later on, too. So here's Claude.
What's good, y'all? It's Claudio, a.k.a. Claude, a.k.a. Off-Ball Screen with Run It Back, my little musical memoir with a dash of memes in the form of a newsletter. Runitback.co, if you're interested. Josh graciously gave me this space to talk about nostalgia and what it means to me. And the first thing that comes to mind is my dad. He was a huge musical influence on me growing up, got a lot of my music taste from him. And whenever I think of him, I think about this artist, Cake. Specifically the album Prolonging the Magic. Now, if you ask me if I'm a huge fan of Cake, I could say yeah, but mostly I'm just a fan of this album. He used to play it a ton when we were younger, and I'll always forever associate this album with him. Now, when I think about nostalgia in this context, I think for me, it's like, I'll be able to carry him and his essence wherever I go, right? As we all move on to those next chapters in our life, I'll be able to think about those times with him through music. And I think that's pretty powerful in terms of what nostalgia can bring in terms of feeling, in terms of just, I don't know, going back to a moment in time where, you know, we don't normally live in because we're in the present, we're in the future. And I think nostalgia can do a really good job of teaching us what we can learn from the past, how it can inform our present, and how it can help envision our future. I think in addition with nostalgia, right, it's nice to have, but I don't want to get stuck in it, right? I think there are ways to channel what we've learned in tradition, in nostalgia, and kind of bring it with us into a future state, right? And when I think going back to my dad, he'll help me inform how to become a father, how to become a person in this world, navigating as a person of color and all those things, right? So there will always be those memories of him during that time when I was younger, but there will also be new memories that will be created, and I'm grateful that all these memories I'll be creating with him will forever be associated with Cake. So without further ado, here is the opening song from Prolonging the Magic. Enjoy.
I've got wheels of polished steel. I've got tires that grab the road. I've got seats that selflessly hold my friends, and a trunk that can carry the heaviest of loads. I've got a mind that can steer me to your house, and a heart that can bring you red flowers. My intentions are good and earnest and true, but under my hood is internal combustion power. And Satan is my motor. Hear my motor part. Satan is my motor. Motor. Hear my motor part. Satan is the only one who seems to understand. I've got brakes, I'm wide awake. I can stop this car at any time. At the very last second, I can change directions, turn completely around if I feel so inclined. I've got a mind that can steer me to your house, and a heart that is my motor.
It's amazing to see that when we get older, we find more ways to honor our parents. And I think playing the music that our parents played for us, I think that's a great way to honor them and honor ourselves at the same time. I hope when I'm older, my kids honor me by playing Pierre Bourne. Did you know The Life of Pierre came out like 5 years ago? Like, God damn. That was a whole ass long time ago. I'm recording this on Valentine's Day. Feeling a little sore. And I played this a couple times today on my commute to and from home during lunch because I live so close. I live living close to work because I could drive home to take a shit and be like, yo, I'm going to leave and come back real quick and like be gone for like maybe 15, 20 minutes. Anyways, here's some Pierre.
Forever, girl, you got me waiting on your love forever. You can keep me waiting on your love forever. Girl, you got me waiting on your love forever.
What's up, y'all? Welcome back to Intercession. I gotta make some decisions because I used up more time than I thought I would. Only have like half an hour left with y'all. I want to show you McGee. The new album is really good. And I want to talk about it. But I want to show three songs. I gotta make a choice. I also really want to show you this short story that I heard on last week and just brought me to tears. Yeah, so let's do that. And then whatever time we got left. Here is 11 by Sandra Cisneros. I'm not using her narration. For time's sake, I'm using one that's a little bit shorter in duration. But here it is.
11 by Sandra Cisneros. What they don't understand about birthdays and what they never tell you is that when you're 11, you're also 10 and 9 and 8 and 7 and 6 and 5 and 4 and 3 and 2 and 1. And when you wake up on your 11th birthday, you expect to feel 11, but you don't. You open your eyes and everything's just like yesterday, only it's today. And you don't feel 11 at all. You feel like you're still 10. And you are underneath the year that makes you 11. Like some days you might say something stupid, and that's the part of you that's still 10. Or maybe some days you might need to sit on your mama's lap because you're scared, and that's the part of you that's 5. And maybe one day when you're all grown up, maybe you will need to cry, like if you're 3, and that's okay. And that's what I tell mama when she's sad and needs to cry. Maybe she's feeling 3. Because the way you grow old is kind of like an onion, or like the rings inside a tree trunk, or like my wooden dolls that fit one inside the other, each year inside the next one. That's how being 11 years old is. You don't feel 11, not right away. It takes a few days, weeks even, sometimes even months before you say 11 when they ask you. And you don't feel smart 11, not until you're almost 12. That's the way it is. Only today I wish I didn't have only 11 years rattling inside me like pennies in a tin Band-Aid box. Today, I wish I was 102 instead of 11, because if I was 102, I'd have known what to say when Mrs. Price put the red sweater on my desk. I would have known how to tell her it wasn't mine, instead of just sitting there with that look on my face and nothing coming out of my mouth. "Whose is this?" Miss Price says, and she holds the red sweater up in the air for all the class to see. "Whose? It's been sitting in the coat room for a month." "Not mine," says everybody. "Not me." "It has to belong to somebody," Mrs. Price keeps saying, but nobody can remember. It's an ugly sweater with red plastic buttons and a collar and sleeves all stretched out like you could use it for a jump rope. It's maybe 1,000 years old, and even if it belonged to me, I wouldn't say so. Maybe because I'm skinny, maybe because she doesn't like me, that stupid Sylvia Saldivar says, "I think it belongs to Rachel." An ugly sweater like that, all raggedy and old, but Mrs. Price believes her. Mrs. Price takes the sweater and puts it right on my desk. But when I open my mouth, nothing comes out. "That's not, I don't, you're not mine," I finally say in a little voice that was maybe me when I was 4. "Of course it's yours," Mrs. Price says. "I remember you wearing it once." Because she's older and the teacher, she's right and I'm not. "Not mine, not mine, not mine." But Mrs. Price is already turning to page 32 in math problem number 4. I don't know why, but all of a sudden I'm feeling sick inside. Like the part of me that's 3 wants to come out of my eyes. Only I squeeze them shut tight and bite down on my teeth real hard and try to remember today I am 11. 11. Mama is making a cake for me tonight. And when Papa comes home, everybody will sing happy birthday. Happy birthday to you. But when the sick feeling goes away and I open my eyes, the red sweater is still sitting there like a big red mountain. I move this red sweater to the corner of my desk with my ruler. I move my pencil and books and eraser as far from it as possible. I even move my chair a little to the right. Not mine. Not mine. Not mine. In my head, I'm thinking how long till lunchtime. How long till I can take the red sweater and throw it over the schoolyard fence, or leave it hanging on a parking meter, or bunch it up into a little ball and toss it into the alley. Except, when math period ends, Mrs. Price says loud and in front of everybody, "Now, Rachel, that's enough," because she sees I've shoved the red sweater to the tippy top corner of my desk, and it's hanging all over the edge like a waterfall. but I don't care. Rachel, Miss Price says. She says it like she's getting mad. You put that sweater on right now and no more nonsense. But it's not now, Mrs. Price says. This is when I wish I wasn't 11, because all the years inside of me, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1, are pushing at the back of my eyes when I put one arm through one sleeve of the sweater that smells like cottage cheese, and then the other arm through the other, and stand there with my arms apart, like if the sweater hurts me, and it does, all itchy and full of germs that aren't even mine. That's when everything I've been holding in since this morning, since when Mrs. Price put the sweater on my desk, finally lets go, and all of a sudden I'm crying in front of everybody. I wish I was invisible, but I'm not. I'm 11, and it's my birthday today, and I'm crying like I'm 3 in front of everybody. I put my head down on the desk and bury my face in my stupid clown sweater arms. My face all hot and spit coming out of my mouth because I can't stop the little animal noises from coming out of me until there aren't any more tears left in my eyes. And it's just my body shaking like when you have the hiccups. And my whole head hurts like when you drink milk too fast. But the worst part is right before the bell rings for lunch, that stupid Phyllis Lopez, who is even dumber than Sylvia Saldivar, says she remembers the red sweater is hers. I take it off right away and give it to her. Only Mrs. Price pretends like everything's okay. Today, I'm 11. There's a cake Mama's making me tonight, and when Papa comes home from work, we'll eat it. There'll be candles and presents, and everybody will sing, happy birthday to you, Rachel. Only, it's too late. I'm 11 today. I'm 11, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. But I wish I was 102. I wish I was anything but 11. Because I want today to be far away already. Far away like a runaway balloon. Like a tiny O in the sky. So tiny, you have to close your eyes to see it.
Those moments where we don't want to be our age anymore. Because we feel stuck and we don't know what to say. We just don't have the words. Those moments hurt. But it's important for you to forgive yourself during those times you were silent and regret the things that you didn't get to say. You gotta forgive yourself for that because you're gonna be older one day. And that older you will be able to look back to you when you were 28 or 17 or 13 or 4, and that version of you, that older version of you, will be able to take care of those younger yous. You just gotta allow yourself to do it. Okay, that brings me back to one time I wrote in Run It Back about I wrote about comfort and how important comfort is in a time of like despair. For me was COVID, and I was just going, it was just a rough time for me, and I wrote about how like I just want to play the hits. I don't want to hear about any Frank Ocean clones. And when I said Frank Ocean clones, I was subtweeting McGee and Dijon and all those other artists that showed up between 2018 and 2021 that were doing Frank Ocean type music. I think that's the only way I could describe it. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I was ready to replace Frank Ocean. I just didn't have the capacity. But I was revisiting McGee's stuff. His 2020 stuff. Maybe like a couple months ago. And I was like, wow, this is actually like really good. But I was still a little resistant because I try not to. You guys know I love like white girl music. But as much as I like white girl music, I do my best to prioritize non-white music. So like that's where my resistance comes from because I was like, I don't want to really fuck with this white dude that is doing like R&B type shit. But I kind of, you know, let my guard down and let myself enjoy it. And I gotta say, I really like it. And his album just came out and it's like really good. But let's start with more, I guess, older stuff. I guess stuff from 2020. This stuff, like, it makes me feel something. When Channel Orange came out, when Blonde came out, those like hit me really hard. Like I cried upon first listen type shit. Why am I saying that? It's because I work at high school. This is like stuff that has made me feel a lot of something, and that's been kind of rare for me. Here's Dimeback.
Baby,
This is like very soft rock 70s palette type stuff, but I don't know, like the emotion behind it reminds me of like Frank Ocean. It's working for me. It's a good mix for me. So when I did that article or that write up for Run It Back all those years ago, I was specifically talking about McGee and Dijon, and I didn't know this, but McGee played guitar on that last Dijon album. They know each other. That's so cool to me. There's a song on McGee's current album, or his latest album, called D&M, and it stands for Dijon and Mike, which is McGee's name. I think that's so cute. It's so cool. A little bit of lore, you know? I think I have time. Fuck, do I have time? Oh, I want to play The Dress so bad. But I'll play another McGee song. And I think I'm going to end with The Dress. I was going to play Sabrina the Teenage DJ. But yeah, let's just see what happens. I think I could do it. I'm glad I let myself be wrong about this, and I continue to let myself try things. Man, I just really like this album, and I only played the singles. Like, there's actual hitters on the album. We got 15 minutes left. You know what? Honestly, like, I gotta be real with myself. I'm like tired. But I also believe in consistency, and I want to consistently express myself. And this is a big reason of why I'm doing this. I just want to give myself a chance. You know what I mean? So yeah, it's only episode 2 and I'm getting sappy already. There's just a lot of feelings happening right now. With that being said, okay, I think I got like 14 minutes left. I'm just going to play Dijon, The Dress. I think that's a great song. And then I will play Sabrina, the Teenage DJ. Listening to that last track, it makes me feel like I am closing my eyes and I see every clip art image that I've ever seen in my whole entire life, like, flash before my eyes. I'll leave you with that. Thanks for joining Intercession episode 2. Shouts out to Orange Radio. Shouts out to Tiny's Oakland. Shouts out to Run It Back. Thank you everyone for listening. If you sent me a voice note, I love you. Send your friends some voice notes. And do something nice, especially for yourself.
Do you still take a long time to get ready? 'Cause you used to make too much out of that kind of stuff. And you turn your head around and it kills. 'Cause the dress looks nice on you still. And it always will. I wait a long time. Catching up. No, we don't have to patch things up. Just turn the lights down. Thrill. 'Cause the dress looks nice on you still. And it always was on. We should go out and dance like we used to dance. We should go out in old hands. Lovers' old hands. And I can't tell you. That's a question to answer I don't have. Okay, I took a long time to get ready to. 'Cause I did remember it. And my head got heavy like it tends to do. And I know that I'm part of the deal. But the dress looks nice on you still. And it always will. I hated myself for some time. For the things that I said, the things that I put in your head. And I tried and I tried and I failed. But the dress looks nice on you still. And it always will so. Like we used to dance. We should go out in old hands. Lovers' old hands. And I can't tell you who's gonna last. Well, maybe that's a question to answer I don't have. Well, maybe that's a question to answer I don't have. We should go out and dance like we used to dance. Old hands, and I can't tell you who's gonna last. Maybe that's the answer I don't have.
everybody out there.
Yeah, boy, I'm trying to cheat my baby, right?
Or are we gonna just spend a little time on this shit?
Definitely.